All right. Anyway, I'll just repeat two things of it. Nahum means consolation, and Assyria was now about to be destroyed. The consolation of the world would be its destruction. So this is the point of the little book of Nahum. The whole book is a book on Nineveh. That's all he deals with there. I brought along a little book here that describes, I think, this nation of Assyria better than any reading that I have found. I notice that judged from the vaunting inscriptions of the kings, no power more useless, more savage, more terrible ever cast its gigantic shadow on the page of history as it passed on the way to ruin. There is their goddess with flayed skins of rival monarchs. They delighted in skinning people alive, taking those skins and either making pillars or putting them around the pillars or make lampshades out of them or things of that nature. Another one of their inscriptions tells how that one king took the end of it and tore their lips out, things of that nature, cut off their hands and turned them loose. I guess the most cruel nation that ever existed on earth. Now, when you realize that, then you turn to Nahum, you can understand why Nahum is describing the destruction of this city. And now he isn't gloating over it, he's simply describing it in this very poetic way here. So it's simply a great at last. And as we read it, I want you to get the spirit and feeling of it. Now, remember, Assyria had invaded the land back in about 725 and had taken away the northern tribes of Israel in 722. It came on down to Jerusalem and tried to take the city of Jerusalem, but they failed to do that. Because in one night, God destroyed 185,000 of their soldiers in one night by a miracle. And the king went on back home then. And his two of his sons killed him or slew him while he was worshiping his god. And a third son, Ashurbanipal, he became the king. And one of his descendants was the one that was so cruel and recorded most of the cruel things they did. But at any rate, that gives you an idea of it. Now let's turn to our book and begin reading. Burden of Nineveh. Now the word burden means simply a heavy weight. This is a heavy judgment that God is pronouncing upon Nineveh. Now remember, Nineveh was the capital of Assyria, 225 miles north of Babylon. Babylon was on the Euphrates River before it emptied into the Tigris. Nineveh was on the Tigris River, about 225 miles north of Babylon. Right? The book of the vision of Nahum, the Elkoshite. We do not know where Elkosh was. People have tried to locate it where one little village named Elkosh, just over there north of Babylon, but I know it wasn't there, somewhere in Judah. So just where, we do not know. But at any rate, it was either, most people think it was probably down close to Jerusalem, somewhere in that area. But nobody knows. So Nahum the Elkoshite, as of this village of Elkosh. Now comes Jehovah. Jehovah is mentioned five times. I want you to note now the emphasis that Nahum puts here on the fact that Jehovah is going to execute this judgment. It's an execution of God. And the thing that all these prophets, class, are pointing out, and you, I know you, we pointed out over and over again, they all deal with the fact that nations are in the hands of God. God determines the destiny of nations. Not in the hands of Mr. Bush, it won't be in the hands of the next president. Not in the hands of those fellows over in Europe and all that. All nations, their destiny is determined by God. God said in one of the Psalms, the wicked shall be turned back into Sheol, even all the nations that forget God. And the blessed is the nation whose king is righteous, whose king fears Jehovah. And many, many passages back there deal with it. Now, over and over, God is spoken of as the king of these nations, the king of the kings. Now in the New Testament, Jesus Christ is the King of Kings. He is the Lord of Lords. He is the ruler of the kings of the earth. So what God did back yonder, Christ is doing now. This is what I want you to understand, and I hope when I'm long gone, as you read your Bible, and as judgment comes upon this country, you look back and say, well, Brother Haley pointed that out back from the prophets of old, that it was on its way. It is. It's coming. I couldn't tell you when, don't know how. I just know God. I know how God operates. I know what God does, because I've been studying it for 60 years, for at least 55, the prophets, and what God does to them. And I know Jehovah is a jealous God and avenger. Jehovah avengeth and is full of wrath. Jehovah taketh vengeance on his adversaries, and he reserveth wrath for his enemies. Jehovah is slow to anger and great in power, and will by no means clear the guilty. Jehovah hath his way in the whirlwind and in the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. Now let's go back and notice what he said here in this. Five times he announces that Jehovah does these things. Now first, Jehovah is a jealous God. Now the word jealous comes from the word zealous. God is zealous for his people. He is jealous of his own godhood. Now the word jealous, really when it comes to human relations at least, is that fear of being supplanted. I think I mentioned that last Sunday, Sunday before last. It's the fear of being supplanted in the affections of one by another. In other words, God's jealousy is that dislike of being supplanted by his people as they turn to other gods. Now, a husband or wife, same way. A man is jealous of his wife when he sees that he is being supplanted in her life by another man. A woman is jealous of a husband when she sees that she is being supplanted by another woman in his affection. Right? So when God sees himself being supplanted in the affection of his people by a non-entity, that is a false god, why, that's God's jealousy, because he is zealous for his people and zealous for his own name. That helps you to understand that. He's a jealous God and avenger. Now, he doesn't take revenge. Now, the word avenge means to vindicate righteousness by a righteous judgment. I mean, vindicate, his righteousness when it's mistreated or when wrong exists, by judgment. So he avengeth. Jehovah avengeth and is full of wrath. Now God's wrath is a judicial wrath. It's not just flying off the handle like we might, something like that. That's not the way God acts. His wrath is a judicial wrath, a wrath that demands judgment because of wickedness of people. And think about it like that, you'll understand what his wrath is. He's a righteous God, and when righteousness is trampled underfoot, then God's judicial wrath is executed. All right? Now that's the second one. Now third, Jehovah taketh vengeance on his adversaries, and he reserveth wrath for his enemies. Now these are his adversaries, those that are against God. Like this nation today, I don't think any of us realize how strong atheism and humanism is entrenched in this country. I don't think we really realize it. Wasn't you, Ruby, that told me that you saw that program the other night of a Jew that become a Christian, a lawyer, and he was telling bills in Congress, a congressman are bringing up there that are just completely anti-God, and we don't realize what's going on in our society. We see expressions of it, but remember that God avenges that kind of a thing. Now notice, his vengeance on his adversaries, he reserves wrath for his enemies. What? Now, what about the Christian during that time? I may suffer at the same time. Remember all that God's people have always suffered at the hands of wrong, of the doers of wrong. And so our suffering may be vicarious. Vicarious suffering is the suffering of an innocent person for the guilt of another. Christ's suffering was vicarious. all the prophets suffered vicariously. They were suffering because of the right at the hands of the enemies of God. So Christians have always suffered vicariously from the very beginning of the Christian era. Right now, fourth, Jehovah is slow to anger and great in power, and will by no means clear the guilty. Now, they'll meditate on it, slow to anger. He didn't just jump right in just as soon as the thing, if people do something wrong and destroy them. No, he waits till the cup of their iniquity is full. He waits until he has raised up his prophets and sent them to the people to warn them and to tell them what kind of a God he is. Well, you say God doesn't have any prophets today. Oh, yes, he does. He has those prophets of the Old Testament. Now, what they were teaching back there is God speaking. He didn't have to send another one to tell us the same thing. Once God has laid down the principles by which he rules mankind, you don't need him to send back some more then. So God has laid down the principles in the prophets, the major and the minor prophets, of his greatness and his power, of the execution of his judgment against wickedness and of nations that reject God. All the nations forget God shall be turned into Sheol, he said. Even the nations forget God. They're turned into unseen. Where's Assyria today? Where's Nineveh today? Where's Babylon? Where's the Chaldea? Where are the Edomites? Where are any of those people back there that hated God's people? Where are the Roman Empire that persecuted them? Where are any of them? So the persecutors of the kingdom of God are going to pay for it after a while. Right now, notice here the fifth time. Jehovah hath his way in the whirlwind, that's the cyclone, and in the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. What a majestic picture. What a picture. Here the storm clouds come rolling in and the tornado is taking place. Well, this is God treading space there, executing his judgments. It's just a figure of speech, of course. And so that his purpose in our own minds and realize what God's trying to tell us here. All right, so here are the five things, five times he speaks. He hath his way in the whirlwind and the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. All right, he rebuketh. Now then, here's what he does. He rebuketh the sea and maketh it dry, and drieth up all the rivers. Now he mentioned three great places here. So here the sea, rules in the sea and makes the rivers dry. Well, of course, the oceans have never been dried up. What it means, he controls them. And he controls bodies of water, inland and out, all of them. Now, notice here, through Bashan languishing. Now, Bashan, where was it? It was that country just east of the south end of Galilee. And the flower of Lebanon languishing. Right, now, here this, that word, comma, here, that little jut here in the sea here comes on there. This is Mount Carmel here. It extends out into the sea. Right now, that was a green, always green, a green wooded place. Right, so it's going to languish. And now then, Lebanon, here was Lebanon up here where the great cedars were. So here was this rich grazing land. Here was this rich land here. And here were those great trees up here. Right, I know all of those, now this is a figure of speech. Not necessarily that you're going to take it out on them. But what he's saying is, all of these places, productive places, are going to languish. Right, so he says now then, Bashan languisheth and Carmel, and the flower of Lebanon languisheth. All of those do as a judgment of God, because God controls that. I think our country has been such a wonderfully rich country. I think it's going to be a language one of these days also, because we've abused it and destroyed our resources. Right now, the mountains quake at him, and the hills melt, and the earth is upheaved at his presence. Yea, the world and all that dwell therein. Now look at what you have there. Here the mountains quake. Here the hills melt. The earth is upheaved as if a volcano erupted, and the world at his presence, all the world and they that dwell in it. So God can use all these forces of nature to execute his judgment. Or he can raise up men like he did Nebuchadnezzar and the Assyrians and Cyrus. He can use these men to carry out his purpose. I wouldn't be surprised. Well, he was using Bush, President Bush, in the war against Saddam over yonder. But on the other hand, I think if it had been Bush going on done God's will, he'd probably wiped him off the face of the earth. Now it looks like I'm going to have to go back and do it over again. But if it does, it'll be a judgment of God. Then if it turns around and they throw those bombs back at us, I'll look at that as a judgment of God. You can look at it like you want to, but I see in all these God executing his judgment against wickedness, for he has never allowed a righteous nation to be destroyed. You can't go back and find one. The righteous nations are never destroyed. As long as Israel obeyed God, they never lost a battle. When they disobeyed God, they lost their battle. They lost the war. They lost the country in their disobedience. Well, look a little further now. Who can stand before his indignation? And who can abide in the fierceness of his anger? His wrath is poured out like fire, and the rocks are broken asunder by him. Has ever a great volcano erupted? Has ever a great earthquake shook the rocks and broke them in pieces? All of that, when God's wrath explodes on a nation that's left God out of his thinking. It's a rather frightening thought. But it's always happened. Look back at your study of history, and you'll see it's always happened. The nation becomes so wicked, God brings it to its knees. Always does. Well, all right. But now here's a beautiful, look at this beauty. Here's God's other side now. I remember preaching a sermon on this once on God's other side. Jehovah is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that take refuge in him. Now here in the very midst of this terrible picture of destruction, this terribly destructive picture, as it expresses the wrath of God against the wickedness of this terrible nation here. Now here then is the place of refuge. Jehovah is good. He is a refuge in time of trouble to them that take refuge in him. But when's the time to take refuge in God? I think it's before the cyclone hits. I think before the judgment breaks. Now's the time. That's what Paul said. Now's the acceptable time. Behold, now's the day of salvation. Now's always the time to make preparation for that great day of judgment. Then, if this judgment doesn't hit before Christ comes back, well, then when he comes back, that'll be the final judgment. And those that have taken refuge in him, why, blessed are they. They will have escaped. So mark that seventh verse there. You see, a lot of people don't like the Old Testament. They say, God's presented as cruel, but no, he isn't any such thing. He's always a righteous God. His judgments are always righteous judgments. They're always executed upon a wicked and corrupt world that is cruel like our Assyrians and others like that. All right, so I want to read that once more. Jehovah is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that take refuge in him. But now here, the other side of it, but with an overrunning flood, he will make a full end of her place, that is, of his enemies, and will pursue his enemies into darkness. Well, now last Sunday, we read that passage in Zephaniah. I believe that was the next one over here. Turn back to Zephaniah, and notice what we read last time, down beginning with 2:13. And he was, chapter 2:13, and he will stretch out his hand against the north and destroy Assyria, and will make Nineveh a desolation and dry like the wilderness, and herds shall lie down in the midst of her. All the beasts of the nations, both the pelican and the porcupine, shall lodge in the capital thereof. Their voice shall sing in the windows. Desolation shall be in the thresholds, for he hath laid bare the cedar work. This is the joyous city that dwelt carelessly, that said in her heart, I am, and there is none besides me. How has she become a desolation? A place for beasts to lie down in. Everyone that passeth by her shall hiss and wag his hand. Now Babylon made the same claim in Isaiah 47 later. Babylon didn't learn from that. Babylon said that the same thing. I'll just look at what Babylon said. Chapter 47 here. Treated the two of them alike, I mean, because of their boat here. But in chapter 47 here, and about verse 10, he's talking about Babylon now. She says, I'm a widow and shall not know the loss of children. So verse 10, For thou hast trusted in thy wickedness. Thou hast said, none seeth me. Thy wisdom and thy knowledge, it hath perverted thee. And thou hast said in thy heart, I am, and there is none else besides me. Therefore shall evil come upon thee, thou shalt not know the dawning of it and sore. So the boast of Babylon, of Assyria, Nineveh was, I am, and there is none besides me. And she went down to destruction. Babylon comes along and says, I am, and there is none besides me. And she went down in destruction. Any nation that comes along and boasts like Hitler did of what he was going to do in conquering the world, God always takes care of it. Always does. All right, coming back now to our lesson. And so those first few verses there, Jehovah's power. And what's expressed in those verses, class, is God's infinite power. His power to bring down the greatest and the most powerful of nations. And he can do it in just a few years. It doesn't take a long time. It hasn't been long since the United States was outstanding as a powerful nation. It may be still militarily, but it's a very weak nation inside, in the interior, because it's left God out. It's turned away from God. It's made humanism, atheism, all of these things. He's made these its standard. And what's going to happen to it? God is a powerful God. He can use the forces of nature or the forces of mankind to bring it to its knees. And he'll do it one of these days. I have no question in my mind of what the judgment is coming soon. Now I'm beginning with verse 9. Now here the complete overthrow here of the enemy of Nineveh. What do ye devise against Jehovah? Now the ye is plural. So who would he be talking about? The ye, does that pertain to the Assyrians, the different kings and their rulers? Or does it include Judah? Judah, who is leaving God out of his thinking about this time, also. What do ye devise? And Assyria devise. So now then, what do any of you nation devise? All right, what do ye devise against Jehovah? He will make a full end. Affliction shall not rise up the second time. God gets through with Nineveh this time. She'll be through. They'll not rise up a second time to bother the world. For entangled like thorns and drunkenness with their drink, they are consumed utterly as dry stubble. Here she's consumed, she's drunk on power. Not necessarily drunk on alcohol. Drunk on power, drunk on pride, drunk on wealth, drunk on all of these things. Now, Habakkuk, our next little book we study, it deals with a king who was drunk on power. He was intoxicated on his power. Boy, so were these. You're drunken as with their drink, you see. They are consumed utterly as dry stubble. Now, like thorns, or like a drunk man getting around and stumbling around, like thorns and dry stubble that burn. Here's a dry stubble, just like a little match to it, and here it's gone at a moment. So that's what he's talking about. So God said they're going to consume it as a drunken man that wobbles around and can't do anything, or as thorns and stubble that you set the match to. That's what he's going to do. There is one gone forth out of thee that deviseth evil against Jehovah. I don't know whether that's a particular individual, one of their kings, or not. I don't know who that would be. That counseleth wickedness. Now, at any rate, there was one that does that, a wicked counselor. The alternate reading is a wicked counselor, or one that counseleth wickedness. But who that might have been, I don't know. So let's not try to speculate on that. Thus saith Jehovah, though they be in full strength, and likewise many, even so shall they be cut down, and he shall pass away. Whoever that one was, one at that time, probably one of their kings, one of their rulers, that thought to destroy others or to defend the city, but God said they're going to pass away. Don't care how strong they are. It doesn't matter how many atomic bombs you've got and all that, and how big your navy and your army is. God said your time has come, the time will have come. That's always been that way. All right. Though I have afflicted thee, I will afflict thee no more. And now will I break his yoke from off thee, that is from off of Judah, and will burst thy bonds in sunder. All right, the time has come when God's judgment against Assyria is going to take place. All the wickedness that she's committed and the cruelty is now going to come back upon her. Well, all right. And Jehovah hath given commandment concerning thee, that no more of thy name be sown. Out of the house of thy gods will I cut off the graven image and the molten image. I will make thy grave, for thou art vile. Thou art become lowly. You become a despised people. You become a light, frothy people now in God's sight. So God said, you're vile, I'm going to cut you off. So God issues now this statement through Nahum that whatever it might be, though we've never been cruel, what happened to this country is cursed, is lost its faith in God. It left God out of its thinking. It turned to the humanistic. Gratify the flesh. It's living strictly after the flesh. The great majority are. So this is the thing that happened here. We just ruled God out. And he's not completely, because there are lots of people who still have faith in God. But more and more, the powers that be, they're the ones that are outlawing the idea of God and their laws and all of that. All right? Now behold upon the mountains the feet of him that bringeth good tidings and publisheth peace. Now you have that same statement in Isaiah, Isaiah the 40th chapter. Isaiah is talking about the coming of the Messiah and quoted in the New Testament. Nahum is not talking about the Messiah. He's talking about the one who brings the glad tidings that Nineveh has fallen, that Nineveh is destroyed. So it's simply in Isaiah, it's the coming Messiah who would bring the glad tidings of salvation. This one is one to bring the glad tidings of salvation from Nineveh, for Nineveh will have been destroyed. So remember that. Don't confuse the two statements. If you want to turn to Isaiah the 40th chapter there, I have this statement. I think we can find it out in trouble here. I'm going to go ahead and I can turn right to it. But at any rate, yeah, I did. O thou that tellest good tidings to Zion, get thee up on a high mountain. Thou that tellest good tidings to Jerusalem, lift up thy voice with strength. Lift it up. Be not afraid. Say unto the cities of Judah, behold your God. Behold, the Lord God will come as a mighty one, and his arm will rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his recompense before him. He will feed his flock, and so on. There's another passage there. I thought that was it, but that's not the one I'm looking for. I won't spend any more time on it. But might have been over 61 or 2. At any rate, Isaiah used it of the coming Messiah, Nahum of the coming messenger of the fall of Nineveh. All right? Now he says, cries out to Judah, now, keep thy feasts, O Judah, perform thy vows, for the wicked one shall no more. There was enough of the people to be world power. Now Habakkuk deals with the coming of Babylon as the one that would carry them away into captivity, that would destroy them. So, because then God didn't destroy them at this particular time. But a few years later, he did. He carried them away. About 40 years, I'd say 30 or 40, but maybe not that many. Well, all right. But anyway, he's utterly cut off. Now, in the fifth second, now that's God's power. That's the declaration of God's judgment. Do you have a question on it? I wish you'd involve yourself more. If you got something to say, say it. If you got something to ask, we should ask it. Not good teaching. You get up and fellow do all the talking. Somebody else might have something to say. But anyway, if you don't, well, we'll go ahead. Now then, the next chapter deals with the preparation. Preparation of a nation to destroy Assyria. And this will be Babylon. I'll get about a little of this and we'll finish it next time. Now know, he that dasheth in pieces is come up against thee. Right now, Babylon was the same kind. Babylon dashed in pieces, or not quite as cruel as the Assyrians, because they didn't last as long. But they were cruel, and they would dash them in pieces. Oh, they'd take the babies and dash them against the wall and slay them that way, and slay with the sword. He that dasheth in pieces come up against thee. Keep the fortress. Now look at them. Look at the rumbling and the roaring of this. Keep the fortress. Watch the way. Make thy loins strong. Fortify thy power mightily. For Jehovah restoreth the excellency of Jacob as the excellency of Israel. For the emptiers have emptied them out and destroyed their vine branches. Now the shield of his red, the shield of his mighty man is made red. The valiant men are in scarlet. The chariots flash with steel in the day of his preparation, and the cypress spears are brandished. Now this is a description of the Babylonian 225 miles to the south. Their preparation for war against Assyria, against Nineveh, to destroy it. Now let's go back and look at that for just a moment. First he describes them, that could either dash it in pieces to come up against thee. Now you have dashed in pieces. I've characterized you as Assyrian. Now then another that dashes in pieces is going to come up and give you a dose of your same medicine, of that which you execute on others. Now they're going to do the same to you, but against thee. Now keep the fortress, watch the way, make thy loins strong, make strong, fortify thy power. For Jehovah restoreth the excellency of Jacob. What was the and as the excellency of Israel? Now remember, he's not talking about Israel and Judah. He's talking about the nation there. Jacob, that was his name. That was his name given him at his birth. Israel was the name that God gave him. Your name Jacob, supplanter, that signified or symbolized his physical life, his physical conduct. Israel represented the spiritual aspect of the nation. And so, both Jacob and Israel, the excellency will be restored. Well, that excellency was God himself. God was the excellency that they should have looked to at all times. Whatever the empty of there was Assyria, who had emptied out, or covered it with a heavy, thick hide and painted it red. Now, we don't know which it might have been, but their shields flashed red in the sunlight. The valiant men are in scarlet. There is a statement back in Ezekiel that indicates, that Ezekiel 23, that indicates that they did wear a scarlet, the Babylonians did wear some kind of a scarlet garment in battle. That's on the passage that gives any idea of that. He said the men are made scarlet. The chariots flash with steel in the day of his preparation, and the cypress spears are brandished. Right now, while they're preparing, they're building chariots, steel chariots, and they're dashing here and yonder in preparation for the war. Well, they're flashing in the sunlight. There's a very vivid picture. This is a picture here of the shields of the people there, and of the chariots flashing, the spearheads flashing in the sunlight, as they're marching, preparation for war, and to invade and destroy Nineveh. In this, one more word or two. The chariots rage in the streets. They rush to and fro in the broad ways. The appearance of them is like torches. That is, as they flash in the sunlight there. They run like the lightnings. He remembereth his nobles. They stumble in their march. They make haste to the wall thereof. And the mantlet is prepared. The gates of the rivers are opened and the palace is dissolved. And it's decreed she is uncovered. She is carried away. And her handmaids moan as with the voice of doves beating upon their breast. Now you read that passage. It's a very vivid picture there. You see that. My time up. I see that clock. I forgot my watch. Let me finish this paragraph then. Fine. Now notice that again, class, verse 4. The chariots rage in the streets now. That he sees them as they're coming. He sees them as they get there and all that. But this is a vision of the prophet. This is a prophet seeing what's going to happen here to Nineveh by these Assyrians. I mean to Assyria, what's going to happen to them by the Babylonians. The chariots rage in the street. They rush to and fro in the broad way. Try to get the picture. The appearance of them is like torches. They run like the lightnings. I remember a fellow, I don't know, I didn't know enough Bible to try to explain the rest of it. I remember I was in a place one time where a fellow was selling Bibles. He said, you know, the Bible foretold the coming of the automobile. And I said, sure enough. Yeah, he turned this passage. Notice, he says, they dash to and fro in the street. They rush to and fro in the broad ways. And he said the appearance of them is like torches. They run like the lightning. And that's a prophecy of the automobile. Now, if I'd have had any sense, and I didn't know enough about this passage, I'd ask, well, now that's mighty fine. But now tell me what the rest of that means there. What does that mean there, the chariots raging in the street? And what does it mean down here? It decrees she's uncovered, she's carried away. What does that mean? If you just knew in the next verse or two of the Bible, whenever a fellow makes a fool statement like that out of the Bible, if you just turn to it and look at it in its context, that's all you have to do in order for him to be to find the ignorance of it there. And they found the aeroplane also. It talks about coming in to the coats there like doves there. Aeroplane flying in there. You can make some pretty weird things out of the Bible if you haven't gotten respect for it. Gotten respect for it, you learn what it means, teach it, and you'd be content with that. Well, anyway, that'll be a good place to stop. And the mantlet, what is a mantlet? That's one of those things where maybe you have four or six wheels on it, and a canopy over it here, and no forward. And the soldiers get under that, and they push it along here by the axles here, and they push it up to the gate or the door, and then they take a battering ram under that, batter the door down, and they protect from arrows above, you see. Think of the ingenuity man has put into war machines. And the history of inventions almost goes back to war that demanded these inventions. So that was this thing here. You know, I've seen the picture of them, and I remember seeing the picture of them in one of my old dictionaries of this mantlet here. And so that was what he said, it decreed, she's uncovered, she's carried with a handmaid moan, or beating upon their breast. So here, time has come now when Nineveh, who had destroyed so many cities and slain so many people, now it's going to come back on you, coming back to you. Well, we'll stop there. Now, I won't be here next Sunday. Brother Normandy Weiss will be with you next Sunday. I'll be there in Texas next week. But I'll be back for the following Sunday. So we'll take up here following Sunday. Brother DeWeese will be with you next Sunday with the lesson and the Sunday. All right, the class is excused.